Well, I think what you always want to do is you want to look at, you understand results. So, you know, I'm a big believer in outcomes. So you don't say, I want to be a writer. You say, hey, I want to help you draw more fans to your game. Here's writing that will do that. I want, you know, you tell people the outcome. For your listeners that are young, I'm going to give them the question of questions. When you're in an interview, you say to the person interviewing you, if you offered me a job and I took it, what exactly would I accomplish? Because people are looking for outcomes. I'm not looking for salespeople. I'm looking for revenue from sales. So tell me how you're going to get it. And I think you've got to think of the ultimate outcome that the person is looking for.
John Dutton.
I'm very well, thank you. My pleasure to join you.
Armand Ahluwalia.
Thank you so much, Eugene. This is quite an honor. I appreciate you you extending the offer to come here and speak today.
Pedro Diaz-Ridao.
First of all, thanks for having me and excited, you know, to be part of this podcast.
Ronan Doniger.
Huge. Thank you very much. I suppose, first of all, for having me on your show.
Dean Butchin.
The key point is ask, 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 and never give up.
And welcome to eProcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to eProcast. I'm your host, Eugenio, the Big E Procopi, and thanks for taking the time out of your day to tune in to this brand new episode of the podcast. Every week, I'm sitting down, either live or virtually, with professionals and entrepreneurs in the sports industry, and they share their story and how they got to who they are today. And the main mission is to help you get your foot in the door or transition towards this awesome and highly competitive industry. Before digging into this week's interview, I would like to ask you to subscribe up on Apple, Spotify, or any other platform you are listening to and leave a rate and review. It would mean a lot to me. And also, if you would like to say hi or have any questions or there's any way I can help you, all my social media accounts are in the episode notes. Let's connect and grow together. This week, I'm joined by Quint Studer, the owner of the minor league baseball team, Pensacola Blue Wahoos, and also the host of the Busy Leaders podcast and the author of the book, Building a Vibrant Community. In this episode, Quint shared his story of how he got to own a sports team, how is he building the team of professionals at the Wahoos, how he has built a vibrant community in the city of Pensacola, Florida, and also advice for young boys and girls who want to work in sports, and many, many, many more. I hope you'll get a lot of value out of this one. Without further ado, the chat with Quint starts now. Enjoy. So welcome to a new episode of eProcast. I'm happy to be joined by Quint Studer, the owner of the minor league baseball team out of Pensacola, the Blue Wahoos. Quint, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you with me today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Let's play ball.
Let's do it. Quint, we'll talk today a lot about community, about Pensacola, and how you, your input in creating an awesome environment in Pensacola, and of course more about what you've done with the Wahoos. I'm really excited to get and to dig deeper into this, but why don't you share your background, your story, and of course how you got to get to Wahoos?
Well, sure. I basically spent, and I'll go quick, 10 years of my life as a special education teacher, and then I crossed over. You know, like many of the people today, and maybe I was ahead of my time, just by accident, I made a transition from education to healthcare, which isn't that far apart. They both have good industries that you want to make a difference. And I was eventually became president of a hospital in Pensacola, Florida. And I started my own company, Studer Group, which I've now sold, but to help hospitals and health systems. And it did very, very well. And I was on the road all the time. And in 2002, I read with interest in the local newspaper that we had gotten a minor league baseball team. Now, I grew up outside Chicago, so I didn't know a lot about minor league baseball, but I liked, I knew the Cubs, the Sox, and so on. As a kid on Sundays, the local tavern where you'd hop on a bus and you'd go to the White Sox games. And I'd come home from school on WGNN because the Wrigley Field had lights, and I'd watch the end of the Cubs hopefully get home by the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. So I always liked sports. I always liked listening on the radio. I used to wait for my monthly, you know, back then or so, the sporting news and things like that. And I always liked all sports. And so I remember thinking, well, isn't this cool? Now, I did not know there was independent baseball, affiliated baseball. I didn't know. So what I found out later was a struggling independent league that just started. And one guy owned five of the teams, and another person owned one, because he had owned one team that had been successful, and the other teams dropped out. So to keep his team alive with the schedule, he created four other teams, and they picked communities to be in. It was called the Southeastern League. I had no idea when it was in trouble. So I had a week's vacation, probably July, and I decided to go to the baseball game. They played at Pensacola Junior College, which is now State College. It seats 300. I went to the game. The Pensacola Pelicans is who they were calling the Selma Cloverleaves, and it was a fun game. They played hard. It was fun. It reminded you of, you know, a Life magazine pictorial of the baseball. And the next day I picked up the paper and it said the Wahoos were sold, and they saw a picture who bought them. And I said, my gosh, I was sitting like behind this guy. And there's only 300 seats. You're probably sitting pretty close to him. And the next day it said it fell through. So I called the newspaper, found out who owned the team in Montgomery, called it with literally terrible vetting on my part because my heart got ahead of my brain. I pretty much bought the team for just picking up the debt. And half the debt we didn't even know. People would call us and say, you owe us money. Nobody ever paid us.
That's right.
So we'd pay him because we didn't know. We didn't want to get off to a bad start. Sort of like a train wreck where more people come to claim the, you know, damages or whatever possibly on the train. Yeah. So so then two teams dropped out immediately. So we're now down a 4-team league. We're building it up. We're on it like the second opening day, local ownership. And I remember the team that came into town called and said, we won't play because nobody's paid us. So it was a very emotional, difficult thing. But it was a fun season. My wife and I set up the chairs before the games. We, you know, had vendors we tried to find. My wife bought a four-color maker so we could, all the T-shirts were made in our house and the whole bits. You're talking very homegrown operation. The next year, the league went to run again. We sort of thought we had it going. Then it struggled again. And it became really apparent that if I wanted a team, I had to find another league. So I searched and bought a team in the Central League, which was a little stronger. Truly just, they were the Pelicans. I mean, I never even got a ball from the team that I bought. Anyway, and that got us into the Central League, which was run by Miles Wolf, who's just a solid, he just recently retired, but he's the guy that sort of created independent baseball. At one time, he'd owned the Durham Bulls and Baseball America and everything else. And then doing our best to do it, always struggling. We moved to the college, which was about a half hour from downtown, put some money into that stadium. My big worry all the time was the future of the team was based on independent baseball, which I like. But the problem is there was no teams in our area. Teams had either gone out of business or Montgomery became affiliated. Jackson got affiliation. Shreveport went out of business. Dallas went out of business. So also we're sitting there, and I mean, our home games are like Lincoln, Nebraska, St. Paul, Minnesota, Sioux Falls and Sioux City, Iowa. And it's just a matter of time but until they say it's too expensive to travel to Pensacola, Florida. So in the meantime, the city had gone through a hurricane and they were looking at rebuilding. And some people said, let's put a stadium downtown. So I got involved in that. I know you've read chapter two of my book to know how challenging that was. Some people wanted a stadium, some didn't, led to a referendum. And about that time, as the new stadium was being built, the president of my team I had hired, Bruce Baldwin, said, why don't we go affiliated? And I said, well, I don't think we can because Mobile owns the territorial rights and we have to find a team we can buy and move. I didn't realize this. There's lots of brokers in minor league baseball that call you up and, you know, like a real estate broker.
Yeah.
I can find your team and this and that. So they found a team that was for sale in Zeblin, North Carolina, called the Mudcats. Most people have heard of the Carolina Mudcats. It's got a cool logo and a cool look. And they could be moved. So to buy that team, we had to come up with, could we buy our territorial rights? So went to Mobile, bought our territorial rights back for $550,000, which I think never paid. And they shouldn't have even had baseball gave them territorial rights. They shouldn't have given them because it was more than the norm. But nobody thought Pensacola would ever do anything anyway, because we never had any. So we bought the team. And then right before we moved, we had to pay the Central League to get out of the Central League. Sunset. We had to sunset for a year, which was fine. And then I found out I had to buy a team to replace the Zeblin team because they needed another affiliated team. So I didn't. I bought a minority interest of a team in Kingston, North Carolina, that moved into Zeblin. So the Zeblin team could move down here. Wow. I did Central League to move my team to Amarillo. We bought the territorial rights from Mobile. And in 2012, then the Pensacola Blue Wahoos played their first official game in Pensacola. Altogether, it was one of the more complex, expensive transactions in minor league baseball.
Right. Why Pensacola? Why you moved down there?
Well, I think younger people today are smart. They sort of pick where they want to live and then they get a job. But in my generation, you got a job and then you figured out, well, can I live there?
Okay.
So I was living in Chicago, working on the south side of Chicago at a hospital. I was chief operating officer and I wanted to be president of a hospital. The president of the hospital I was at wasn't going anywhere. So that meant you had to move.
Yeah.
And you know, jobs are sort of it's like any development. The closer you get to the top, the pyramid gets real, real narrow. There's a lot of applications. I don't have a master's in healthcare administration or a master's in business administration. So, had to work, I always thought, extra hard. And I had a chance to be president of a hospital in Pensacola, Florida. I didn't even know where it was. I had to look it up in the map before I got here. So I'm in Pensacola. Our one son, we had moved from Wisconsin to Illinois, and he really had a rough move. Mm-hmm. And so when we moved here, he had another rough move, actually a very difficult move psychologically with these relocations. So once we got here, we said, we just can't move again. It's not fair to him no matter what happens. So when I started my company, we just kept it here in Pensacola. And then it grew in Pensacola because my company, all our work was outside Pensacola. So we could have been anywhere, but it wasn't that we got revenue from here, but we kept it here. In fact, we put our offices close to my son's school. So after school, he could walk to the offices. And then it got big enough where you don't move then because you don't want to uproot many of your, half our employees lived in Pensacola out of 250. You don't want to relocate them. So I have this philosophy, no matter where you live, you should do everything you can to make it the best you possibly can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can't agree more. Getting back to the Wahoos, the listeners and the profile of this show, who are listening to this podcast is really international. So it's not only the US. To be honest, I found out recently, what an affiliation means and how, minor league environment works. Can you share more on what an affiliation means? And of course, you recently affiliated with Miami Marlins. And if you can share how the process works and what does it mean, this process of affiliation in sports?
Yeah, and I think it's changed a lot too. When independent baseball first came about, I don't think Major League Baseball was excited about it, because Major League Baseball always really protected their territory.
Yeah.
And so most minor league teams were not located right next close to the major league team. It's so ironic that now they want their minor league teams located, but close to them, but they didn't know that. So they would really be strict about not allowing minor league teams, affiliated teams, to be close to them because they thought they'd compete for fans.
Yeah.
But what happened is Miles Wolf created independent baseball. And it was for those cities that still wanted minor league baseball but couldn't get an affiliation. So they created independent teams. And they were teams that could get their players from anywhere. Many of them were players that had been released from affiliated baseball because, you know, they capped out or they were too old. And they were some undrafted players that didn't get a shot. So this gave them many, many people a shot at their dream that they didn't get before.
Yeah.
So they loaded them into close to some big cities like Newark, you know, New Jersey, close to other teams. Probably one of the more interesting ones was they put a team in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Twins just went crazy at first. And here the Twins now, that's their AAA team now.
Yep.
But back then it was, we just wanted to protect our territory. And affiliated baseball just saw these as competitors to them. Now, the difference is independent baseball, you pay your players and your coaches. Mm-hmm. Affiliated baseball, the major league team pays the players and the coaches.
Okay.
So an independent team has extra cost that an affiliated team does not have. Also, usually when you go to sell your team, now it's changing, but the fact that you had an affiliation made your team worth way more money than a non-affiliated team.
Yeah.
And that's how it was for years and years and years. Out recently, Major League Baseball decided that they wanted to create more of a one baseball. You know, all these, they want baseball to do well in communities that are independent, college would bat, affiliated. So they've really worked hard this last year to create partnerships with the independent teams. Now they can be partners so they can sort of have the MLB feel. They can have be on their, you know, website, use their media. And so on. So it's a little more blurred than it used to be, but not, it's still some of the advantages of affiliated baseball, of course, is besides the cost factor. You actually do get to see players that within, if you're this much of a baseball fan, within 1 or 2 years, you can see them in the majors. However, we also have to remember about 80 to 85% of the people that attend a game will never pay attention to who these players are. Are they going to be in the majors? And in fact, minor league baseball really didn't draw that well until probably the 80s and 90s when teams like some of the independent teams came out and really said it's all about entertainment. You know, St. Paul Saints were probably the leader in this with Bill Murray, one of the owners, and Mike Vick. And if you had a tie on, they'd cut it off when you walked into the stands. And they hired theater students to be their ushers. And so I think independent baseball and some showed the entertainment value. And now, of course, almost every minor league team really strives to have a good product for those that love baseball, but a great entertainment venue for those that are there for family fun or individual fun.
We'll connect this with the community. So you say that now the fans want to come, in your case, to come and watch Wahoos. So they not the players, because the players might change every single year. It all depends, right? Yeah. Is it on a yearly basis? Is it on a...
It change every week. I think the thing that we did from the beginning is realize players come and go. And they'll, of course, there's certain players that you want to maybe recognize a little bit more. But reality, we can stay away from showcasing the players.
Yeah,
because you could have a player on the front of your magazine and he could be gone. You know, Kazoo is our biggest star of our team, our mascot. So I think you want access, and the players are great, and the players have always been wonderful for signing autographs. And that's the beauty about minor league baseball. I mean, I've been to so many minor league games. You know, when I go to a major league game, now I struggle because even if I'm close, I feel I'm far away. Because in minor league baseball, you just feel like you're so close to the action, close to the players. You know, major league baseball. Minor league baseball, the players are signing autographs before the game, after the games. Major league baseball, just for all sorts of reasons and security reasons, you just don't have that. They're so big, where minor league baseball is just so intimate. So I'm a big minor league baseball fan. Like I say, I you sit 12 rows back in minor league baseball, you feel like you almost can grab a mitt. You sit 12 rows back in Major League Baseball, it's a little bit different. Not one's better or worse than the other. They're just different.
Right. And talking about the team behind the team at the Wahoos, can you share more about the team of professionals that is leading, of course, making sure that you're getting a quality product, if you will, on the ballpark every single game. Of course, what are you looking into professionals or youth who to work for the Wahoos?
Okay, well, I think you divide it. We don't have a general manager. We think, you know, it's a nice term to use in Major League Baseball, but seeing we don't have any control over the players, so we don't have that GM type role. We run it like any corporate type business would be run. Our goal is to be the best organization we can possibly be that happens to provide baseball and entertainment. So we've never tried to be a baseball organization. We try to be a great organization and so on. So if you divide it up, we have people that are finance people. Mm-hmm. We have people that are more ticketing type people. You have your sales people. You have your media people, which goes anywhere from your website to your public relations to running your scoreboard, your entertainment. You have your merchandise people, and you have your operations people, and you have your sales people. And so it sort of rotates into, like, I think I've done like probably six main categories. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, every year you bring in interns, which are usually people that want to be in sports in some way. And you bring in trainees. Now, trainees to me from the healthcare world, which I'm used to, would be more considered like residents. You know, these are people that you really want to give a large dose of what it's going to be like. One of the things that I feel that we can do better and we've done better is rotate the resident. So if somebody comes in on ticketing, you still want to get a taste of everything. Yeah. It's just like a doctor. A doctor comes in and thinks they want to be a OBGYN doctor. Then they rotate. Maybe it might be a urologist or an ophthalmologist or something. So I think, you know, you're always looking for talent. And the thing that you've got that people have to realize is, though they want to be around baseball, they really, it's not about baseball that we spend most of our time. You know, it's the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's making sure you're keeping abreast with your season ticket holders, making sure we want our stadium to look like opening day every day. You know, we keep the stadium open. Almost, we have it unlocked all weekdays. People can walk around. We have lots of activities going on. So we don't want it to just look good opening day of the baseball season. So I think it's like any business. You got to be good. And we have a very specific interviewing process. It's sort of hard.
Yep.
You got to go through a whole bunch. And then eventually your peers will decide if you're a good fit or not. So I think that's it. And then what I'm always looking for is people who are responsive, you know, people you don't have to ask. So I think it's a profession that's interesting, because when I got into it, I was sort of surprised because the attitude wasn't geared toward employee retention like I'm used to. You know, in healthcare, man, you want to keep on to your employees. You want an experienced nurse. I mean, you don't want to go to the hospital and have every nurse say orientee on their name badge or something. So I think so we really focus in on development of talent, because we know some people are going to leave, but we want to have great experience. But we work really hard on retention. And then, of course, during the season, we hire about 300 people, and we work hard on their retention. We have about 90 ushers and other staff like that. We might lose 3 or 4 a year. We might only have 4 openings. There's a guy at the airport that works at TSA. Every time I fly, he says, my whole dream is to retire from here and work Blue Wahoo Stadium. So
that's so cool.
One of our ushers was head of Navy's ROTC program worldwide, and now he's an usher. So we are sort of a competitive place that people want to work at. We measure employee engagement twice a year, which we think is important to know how our employees are. We measure turnover. Our manager's evaluation is based on their employees' engagement, because otherwise, I think there's so many people that want to work in professional sports that if you're not careful, if you're not careful, there's so many people that want to work in the sport that you can think you're better than you are because so many people want to work for you. Well, it's not they want to work for you. They just want to work in the game. So like I say, at first it really caught me off guard that there's so much turnover. So we don't have a lot of turnover. We've had our top 2 people have been with me all, you know, really 10 years that we've had the Wahoos. I think there's places for both. So for example, if you're really just a fan more than anything, you're probably better off working as a seasonal employee where you come there when the season's on, the baseball games are on. You know, these are great because they're enthusiastic. You want your usher to be a fan. You want them to be enthusiastic about the game, what's going on. You want your food service people to be excited about the game. You want your camera people, because all our games are televised, to be excited about the game. So if you're just a pure fan, there's a great spot for you because it's fun. You get to the ballpark early, you see the players. I mean, it's fun. Yeah. Now, however, during the off season, which there isn't really any off season, there's some real grit and grind in running a baseball team, you know, from making sure your tickets are getting sold, making sure you're doing sales, you know, making sure that the bathrooms are clean, the locker room's up to date. And we also do something else. And I think most teams do this. So I don't know, but we do a lot of non-game activities. So, you know, we run an Airbnb in our stadium.
Right. We're talking about this with Alex.
Yeah, we were sitting around the table wondering what to do, and there's no baseball. And she said, why don't you make the stadium an Airbnb? And we, you know, I didn't know. So she went online, this Airbnb, there's a website or something, and she checked out, are there any stadiums, Airbnbs? And she couldn't find any. And then she found out very quickly, nothing would stop us from doing it. So I think really within about 48 hours, we announced that we were going to do an Airbnb. And so, you know, you sign up because you're a sports management major and one of your main jobs is making beds, washing towels, and, you know, that's it. And I think people have to realize, you know, a good culture is one where no one says, that's not my job. You can almost tell when you have a bad culture, because people say, well, that's not my job. And you get into that. This has been a really interesting year for us because there's no baseball.
Yeah.
And we made a decision, as you know, which was a little unusual. We did not lay off any staff.
March 2020, pandemic hit. What goes through your mind at that point? And what has been the challenges you've been through? You know, we're now a year later now.
Well, the first thing that goes through your mind is it's just delayed. I mean, I was on the road a lot, and I was supposed to be out in San Diego, and the pandemic was getting up around in March, and I decided not to go to San Diego, and actually they were a little upset that I canceled on them. And then 48 hours later, they stopped the whole conference, so it shows I wasn't that crazy. But, you know, you sit here and you think, okay, we'll probably start May. And then, oh, maybe June. And then we had a pretty good idea that we were never going to open. But that's why we started doing things right away. Now, some organizations said, well, we're going to wait. But we already figured we were ready for opening day. So if they would have called us and said, in 3 days, you're going to open, we could have done it because we'd been prepared once. It's just we're still prepared. So we went to make the decision. We would do like any good business. You looked at what should you do. We could run the entire operation with about 5 people.
Right.
When we're not, if we don't do any activities and don't play baseball, keep the stay, you know, to keep the lights on, keep some ticket action going for the next year, we could run maybe 5-6 people, and you could, but we had 24. Now we also said, so what if it's like if we go down to the core, which is 5 or 6, now we had a 10 or 11 deal, we had an 18 deal. And then when my wife and I looked at each other, we just said, well, you know, we just sold a big apartment building, so we had some money. So why don't we just buy, you know, this year, just, you know, suck it up and lose some money, but keep people employed and build. Our whole goal this year was to build an emotional bank account with our workforce. Because, you know, these were nervous people. They had leases. They had family. I mean, gosh, we had young people that were going to, you know, get help for depression because where do I go? What do I do? And we just didn't want that.
Yeah.
So we announced that we were going to keep everybody. And then we had to restructure, which I thought was smart. We had to let them know we're not a baseball organization. So we broke 24 into 3 teams. One was your basic operations, which is still keep the field nice, make sure it's clean, bathrooms going, because there's a lot of activities.
Yeah.
The other one was your core, which your human resources, finance people, they were still your core because they also, we have some other things besides baseball. So they actually service some other businesses too. And then we took 8 people and we made them our Airbnb team. And we really called them. So we had, and then we broke off a subgroup, which is our event. So what we told everyone is we are no longer a baseball organization. We're an event company. So our goal is to do events. And that's what I'm saying. You know, our head sports writer is probably one of the greatest bed makers you'll ever find now. Can make a bed that you can drop a quarter in. So that's what we did. And, but then it got popular. Now we always wanted to be safe. So we did like anything else. We did some meals, probably movie night. We did movie nights. We did a lot of things on the field. We did disc golf, top golf on our field.
That's really cool.
But we did everything we could to utilize the stadium. So this year, we had over 200 events at the stadium. We had more activity, not more people, because you can't draw the 70 games of 5,000. But we had more activities at the stadium. So, for example, our art center here, every Halloween does glass-blowing pumpkins, and they sell them at their normal place, which is sort of crowded, not a lot of parking. It's a big fundraiser. They did it at the stadium this year, and I think they opened up at 11, and they were supposed to be open from like 11 to 7. By 2 o'clock, they were sold out. Wow. Because people could park, they could walk into the field, you know, those types of things. We also donated days to hospice programs for families who are losing someone or have lost someone. They can come stay in the Airbnb. One of our youth coaches had terminal cancer on a Sunday. They had an event for him and invited his players. He stayed overnight at the stadium that night. And on Tuesday, he passed away. So we did an awful lot of what I would call just good community work.
That's awesome. And also, I remember Mark Cuban was saying, another owner, but he's an NBA owner, of course. You know Mark. He mentioned that it would take about 10 years to regain the trust of the community in case you would start to, you know, they were calculating, you know, what would be the damage if the owners will start, you know, laying off their workers letting them go, and it was about 10 years. What's your thought on that?
Well, I don't know, but you know, both we have to realize there's different types of owners. Mark Cuban's a billionaire,
yeah,
and basketball is not his main revenue producer. I'm not a billionaire, but baseball's. My wife and I were lucky enough to sell our company, and we don't take money out of the baseball team, so we're a little bit different. So there's owners though that live and die. Feed their families based on baseball.
Yeah.
If that was us, we would have probably had to lay off staff because we just wouldn't have had the capital, the cash to keep it going. So I think you can't judge anyone based on what you think because you don't know their situation. Now, I do believe us not laying off staff is paying off in some ways. So for example, we have a halftime media person in Pensacola we just hired. We had over 200 applications.
Wow.
We had 10 of them that had been laid off by Major League Baseball teams trying to come to Pensacola. and we had a president's job in Beloit, a franchise we're gonna be operating because my kids and grandkids live up there. And we had a number of applicants that were coming from AAA, AA, operations. And one of the reasons they were intrigued by jobs is because we had not laid off people. Now, again, I'm not judging those that had to because they might have had to. We would have had to too if we hadn't had money from other sources. But I think you get that reputation that really plays well. And you get a reputation for being creative. I mean, that Airbnb, we were on the Today Show. 1.68 million people watched us one day on the Today Show.
Wow, good for you.
We were on every sports channel, every CBS morning show you can think of. But again, I don't want to judge other owners because we're all in different positions. And again, if we hadn't had money from other sources, we would have probably had to lay off.
Right. Quint, you're also very, very busy person and entrepreneur. And I wanted to ask you where, and this is more a personal thing, where do you find time to do the podcast, and I will encourage the listeners to go and listen to your podcast that you launched, the Busy Leaders podcast. And also, can you share more about the book that you released? Of course, I went through it, the Building a Vibrant Community book.
Well, I think one of the things I do is, over the years, I'm a huge believer in development. So even today, our people every 90 days get 2 days of development. I mean, people that come here have to get used to our culture. We do a lot of development, a lot of investing in people. I have about 8 direct reports that report to me, you know, from one runs the baseball team. I have a not-for-profit that does brain development and training and civic engagement. So, but I was thinking the other day, almost all of them have been with me 5 years plus, which means I don't have to do much because they get it. What the whole goal is to get your people trained well enough with clarity of goals and operations, which gives you time to do other things. So I got involved in our community because, again, I think you should try to make it a better community. And my publicist, I've written a lot of, you know, I think I'm now writing my 11th book, said, well, you should write another book. And this was after 8. I thought you meant the Busy Leaders Handbook, which came out after Vibrant Community. And she said, no, you should write about a community. And, you know, there's many good books about urban planning, but they're mainly written by academias. They're written by people that maybe haven't had a referendum, you know, haven't had people fighting them on things. And so I wrote this book called Building a Vibrant Community, and it's doable steps that a community takes. And the whole goal truly is to keep talent home. You know, if there's the best cities and communities are those that keep their talent home or get their talent back, because it's all about talent. And whoever has the talent wins. So what we have a formula, we say capital follows talent, but talent follows place. So how do you create a great place for people to live? And how do you create a great place for people to work? And your generation is even way smarter than mine, because stuff like where you live, I didn't pay any attention to where I lived. I just wanted the job, and then I'll figure out how to buy a house or rent a house where I'm going to live.
Right.
Your generation is so much more geared toward quality of life that you'll find a place you want to live, or maybe not one city, but places that have what you're looking for. You know, like if you're a snowboarder, you're probably not going to live in Pensacola.
That's true.
And if you like to surf and fish, you're probably not going to live in the mountains. You could for fishing. But so I think you've got to really focus in on your community. And that's just a book, particularly for smaller and mid-market cities that have been losing so much talent over the years to big cities. And it's not affordability. It's more expensive in big cities. We've been losing them because we haven't been able to offer opportunity and vibrancy. So we're really pleased now that we're the 17th best city in the United States to start a new business, according to Verizon. Strong Towns named us the 2019 most sustainable city. Planning Association named our main street, Palafox, one of the 10 best streets in America. We have a ways to go, no doubt, but I think we've really made good progress. We do an awful lot for entrepreneurs. We have program after program for startups and entrepreneurs to help them be successful.
That's really awesome, Quint. And before I can't let you go actually without playing, inviting you to play with me the Hot Stone. It's just quick hitters. First thing that comes to your mind might be a question or a name or something. You ready?
Yes.
All right. So the Hot Stone with Quint Stitter starts right now. What is your top memory since the foundation of Wahoos?
I think the top memory is probably the first game of the year, wondering if you're ever going to play a game. And the game started, it was really reality. And right before the game started, the Blue Angels flew over the stadium. And to hear the people just crowd, yell and scream, because it was really more than a game. It was telling our community that we're moving in the right direction, that we're not standing still.
What time do you usually wake up?
I'm a late waker-upper, so I probably wake up around 7, lay there and stall about till getting out of bed till about 7:30, 7:45. So I'm much more of a night owl.
That's not bad. What goes through your head in the first 30 minutes since you wake up?
Usually because I've been dreaming about something. I swear my brain just goes all the time. And it's usually something that I've creative thought that I want to dictate right away, because it's probably usually something I want to put in a book or something I want to put on a column that I write. So I wake up and I really usually have some creative juices going, because somehow at night, these things come to me that I want to write about or talk about.
That's cool. If you'd have one question to ask the person you admired the most in this world, who that would be, and that would be the question?
I would ask probably my grandfather, and I didn't know him that well, but I would ask him what caused him to know how to connect with people. When my grandfather died in 1967, I was 16 years old and I went to his funeral. And I was just amazed at the lineup of people that were coming to see my grandfather, all races. And this was in Missouri. And it was amazing, the diversity of the people that came to see he's dead, but they came to see my grandmother.
Right.
And everyone, not everyone, but it seemed like the majority of people that walked by said to my grandmother, I got a note from your husband. I got a letter from your husband. Well, after the funeral, we were at their house and I noticed some file cabinets and I started opening them up. My grandfather had written letter after letter after letter to people. Congratulations on being in the choral program in eighth grade. Congratulations on being an Eagle Scout. Congratulations for this, for that, for your promotion. And I thought that was pretty neat. And that's why I write a lot of letters. The other thing is he was bold. He wanted the garbage men in Sedalia, Missouri to get a pay raise, and they were all black. And they didn't get paid a lot. So the city council, they said, we have no money to pay, give them a pay raise. So he said, well, then I'm on a charge for garbage collection. And the city went nuts. We're not going to pay for garbage collection. And the council went nuts. They wouldn't allow him to charge for garbage collection, which meant he couldn't give the sanitation workers a pay raise. So he quit. So the headline in the paper said, L.L. Studer resigns. When he resigned, they all caved in because they wanted him to stay as mayor, and they agreed to pay for garbage so he could give the black sanitation workers a pay raise. And the next couple of days later, it said Mayor Studer's back. And, 1967, to be that courageous and put your whole career and your whole position on the line because you wanted to give other people a pay raise, I thought that took a lot of guts and a lot of courage. And it might not seem like it, but I think it did.
That's awesome. And one of the last ones, what is the biggest problem that you would like to solve in your life?
Children ready for kindergarten, because there's a great correlation. If you're not ready for kindergarten, you're going to struggle in school. I don't blame a kid for dropping out. If you're 16 and you're two grades behind, what are you going to do? Sit there till you're 20? And yet if you drop out of high school, your career is pretty limited. Research shows that 80 to 85% of the brain is developed by age 3. So here in Escambia County, we've created a program called Build a Brain, Build a Life, Build a Community, where every mom that leaves a hospital gets a tutorial on how to build her baby's brain. And we now have peer-reviewed research from the University of Chicago that shows we're turning the dial. I was on a podcast about a month ago, and they said, if you had $1 billion, what would you do with it? I said, I'd make sure every mom that leaves a hospital understands how to build her baby's brain, because it's not an expensive thing. Yeah. It's easy to do, but hospitals in general don't do it. Now, that doesn't mean they don't do something. They might give a book, but this is an actual tutorial that the mom goes through. So when she leaves the hospital, she knows exactly how she can build her baby's brain. Because in lower socioeconomic conditions, a child will hear 30% less words than others. And it all comes down to verbal communication, building the brain, because the neuron hits a neuron. So I would solve the issue and make sure every child is ready for kindergarten.
I think this is a great one. And actually having a nephew who is that age, he's now almost turning 2. I think this is definitely a subject.
Got one more year yeah, to pump it up.
Yeah. It's definitely a subject for another discussion, not on a sports business podcast, but definitely a good one. And I'd love to connect to talk about this particular subject. And last but not least, Quint, just to give the ultimate value to the listeners who are the you know, most of the listeners are really trying to, of this podcast, are trying to get into the industry. And, you know, sometimes a struggle, of course, now even pandemic and the competition is even higher. What would be your ultimate advice to those who want to get into the industry right now or transition right into a sports?
It's such a tough deal. It's so, so competitive. It's just so competitive. I think you have to look at your skills and say, search more for how you develop your skills versus what particular job you want. And it's all about honing your skill set. And I think it's looking at, okay, so for example, our head of media is very, very good. He's a, so recently though, I'm putting him through presentation training.
Okay.
Because I think if he learns how to present better, it'll help his career. And I think you have to look at your skill set. Also, if you can't get into sports right away, go get a job that you are, can transfer. Almost everything transfers into baseball or sports. If you can sell, you can work in ticket and sales. If you know basic operations, you can work in operations, you know, which operations I clarify as keeping the facility up to date, keep the grounds up to date, keeping everything looking right. In the area of media, you can do those types of things almost anywhere. You know, you can go in. Our head of media was a teacher. Was a teacher that always wanted to be in media, but there was no job opening. But, you know, teaching, you're presenting, you're writing. And then the other thing is freelance. Don't be afraid to freelance. Don't be afraid to come in and say, let me take a shot at this. Let me do this for you. Let me do that for you. And it's also nothing wrong with starting in high school and college. You just, it's all about building your, honing your, as Stephen Covey would say in Seven Essential Habits of Highly Effective People, you just got to keep sharpening your saw. Which means keep building your skill set.
Right, and what would differentiate what someone can do in order to differentiate themselves from the others?
Well, I think what you always want to do is you want to look at, you understand results. So you know, I'm a big believer in outcomes. So you don't say I want to be a writer. You say, hey, I want to help you draw more fans to your game. Here's writing that will do that. I want, you know, you tell people the outcome. For your listeners that are young, I'm going to give them the question of questions. When you're in an interview, you say to the person interviewing you, if you offered me a job and I took it, what exactly would I accomplish? Because people are looking for outcomes. I'm not looking for salespeople. I'm looking for revenue from sales. So tell me how you're going to get it. And I think you've got to think of the ultimate outcome the person is looking for. So I know in our evaluation, our media people, their evaluation is based on walk-ups. So how many people are walking up to come to a game? It's not, do you have a cute story? It's not how many hits you got on the website. That means nothing to me unless they showed up at a game. Or how much merchandise are you driving? So I think people get caught up in the activity. And really what you want to get caught up in, what is the outcome you're looking for? And it's quite an adjustment for when our people come in to realize that, you know, you're a great media person, you think. Well, if you are, then you should be drawing more fans to the game. So what are you going to do? So we have, our attendance goes up. What are you going to do for our sales go up? And a lot of people in the media have never had in their evaluation attendance. They've had like, how many hits do you get? How many looks do you get? That's all cute, but it's not going to pay the bill.
Yeah, thinking about value, what value will you bring to that organization you're applying for? And I think this is ultimately why that company or organizations would hire you for, right?
Well, it's like Tommy Thrall. Tommy Thrall's now took Marty Brennan's place as the play-by-play broadcaster for the Cincinnati Reds. Mm-hmm. He went from the Pensacola Blue Wahoos to the major leagues. I think it's harder to do it in broadcasting than on the field. But what he did do is when the season was over, he didn't leave town. He went to the local TV station. So he was always being exposed. So when people saw Tommy Thrall, they thought, oh, he's the Blue Wahoo guy. You know, you go and you MC events. You go and you, you know, work at high school games. You keep yourself seen, because then you're not only just our media guy. In essence, you're keeping our exposure all year long. That's the type of thinking now. Tommy, I don't think, got hired by the Cincinnati Reds because he did high school football games.
Yeah.
But I do think that that exposure was valuable to us. So when they called us for a recommendation, we could not have been more supportive of him as a human being and as a professional. what he can give back to the community. Because remember, they're looking for the same thing. They're not looking for a guy or a lady just to do play-by-play. They want somebody to become a community member.
Yeah.
So if you're in minor leagues, you got to realize to hit the majors, you got to be part of the community. You got to draw the fans. I mean, you know, and I think Tommy Thrall is a great example of thinking bigger than just I do play-by-play for the Wahoos and end up now, you know, being a play-by-play in the major leagues for the Cincinnati Reds. So that's the type of career thinking that I'm suggesting.
Quint, thank you for taking your time and joining the podcast. I'm sure that the audience will get a lot of value out of this, and I encourage them to go follow you on your social and everything you do.
And my email is quint@quintstuter.com. My phone number is 850-232-4648. And every fan that comes to a Wahoo game gets my cell number. So if they have any issues, we can solve it. So if anyone wants to drop me an email, quint@quintstuter.com or a text, 850-232-4648. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your show.
Thank you so much, Quint. Thank you. And wish you all the very best in what you do.
Got it. Thank you.
That's it. Episode's over. Please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you felt connected with Quint's story, you can email him directly and connect on LinkedIn. Stay tuned for the upcoming episodes and go follow eProcast on all social platforms to not miss any action. See you next week. Peace out.